What is it about Mars that simply captures our fascination, our imagination? What is it? I remember looking at Mars with a telescope when I was a kid. Saw this little red speck. But just thinking about its possibilities, truly amazing. Anyways, we'll be back in a moment. More with Mike Barra and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Mike Barra with us. Mike, in your book, with some of the pictures on Mars, that little figurine, it looks like something waving. What is that?
I don't know for sure, but my best guess at this point is that it's a little figurine that looks like something waving, because there's no reason to think it's not that. No, you know, George, remember that when that first controversy first happened, the basic criticisms, well, first of all, I think Phil Plait came out and said it was a statue of Bigfoot. And that was just really ridiculous, because I don't know anybody who said it looked like Bigfoot. But it looks exactly like this mermaid statue that's actually in, I think, the port in Stockholm. I'm not 100% positive. I've got it in the book. But, you know, it looks like a little figurine. And the only real argument against it being a human figure is that it's 2 inches tall. Well, as I point out in the book and as I show in some of the pictures, you know, the Egyptians made statues of their pharaohs that were no more than 2 inches, that were virtually exactly the same size. So that's absolutely no reason to say it's not, you know, some sort of statue or amulet or something, you know, maybe that somebody wore around their neck at one time.
It's
hard to tell.
How big
is it? And you know what? If you look at the panorama that it is on, all around it is stuff that looks artificial. They look like air conditioning units. It looks like there's a junk mechanical stuff that, you know, may have flywheels and motors in it. I mean, basically all around that area you see other stuff that looks artificial if you have a mechanical mindset. And you know, the reality is that makes it, I think, a lot higher probability that it is something like a figurine than it would be if there was nothing else interesting around it except rocks.
Exactly. And mermaid is in Copenhagen.
Copenhagen, thank you.
That's right. Okay. How big is that figurine in your opinion?
It's about 2 inches. Yeah, it's a little over two inches tall. Yeah.
In which of the rovers shot that?
That was
Spirit?
Spirit. Spirit. Yeah, Spirit has some of the most. That was in the area around home plate when Spirit went and investigated home plate. And there's so many pictures of artificial things around that home plate area. It kind of looks like the foundation of a building or a very large habitat that, you know, has just completely eroded away, but there's still junk scattered around all over the place.
The late Arthur C. Clarke talked about glass worms structures on Mars.
Yeah.
What did he mean?
Well, there was these pictures that came out. It was a Mars Global Surveyor picture that I think, you know, Hoagie posted initially, and it would basically look like a long transparent tube that had these ribs wrapped around it that were, you know, supporting it. And inside of it, there even appeared to be an object that you could actually see inside this glassy tube-like structure. And it was really, really super highly reflective. It was reflecting back a really, you know, bright glint of light. And Arthur Clarke saw it, and he said, "Well, you know, it's like a giant worm. It's a sandworm from Dune." And his concept was that it was fossilized. And again, the arguments against it is that it's convex rather than concave. There's been 3D analysis done that's conclusively proved that that's not true. And recently, some people were blogging about it and said, "Oh, those are just sand dunes." And you know, I mean, again, as you look at these images, especially there's a brand new Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter image, these so-called sand dunes, some of them have, you know, square sections. In other words, they're connected at right angles to each other by other bar-like structures. And I don't know any sand dunes that run at 90-degree angles to each other. It just doesn't happen that way. So the whole sand dune theory just really completely breaks down. One thing I did see once that was pretty interesting is that it might be a very large ice flow, like a tube of ice, which there are some of those in Norway and places like
in
that.
In natural
that
state,
looks,
right?
That looks similar, but either way, it's an extraordinary discovery. And the other thing, George, is that the critics have said, well, the bright spot is just, it's not anything, you know, really super bright or metallic or reflective there. It's just an artifact of, you know, the processing. And in fact, when you took the second picture from MRO, you had the same exact bright, brilliantly reflective spot, which is completely unnatural. I mean, it's about 14 times brighter than anything else in the area. So something's there. It's long. It looks like glass or ice. and it's got what clearly looked to me like structural supports that, you know, they wrap around. They go from the bottom up to the top and around, and it's a really weird thing. I mean, maybe the Martians, after the devastation, maybe they had to find ways to get water to some of the desiccated areas of the planet. Maybe they were living underground, and this was part of their underground water transport system. And when the areas there sort of split apart, and the ground split apart there and exposed them, maybe everything just froze up.
Well, you know, that was one of my next questions, Mike, that the devastation, would it have left some inhabitants, if there were any, living on the planet? Could they have escaped in time? Could they have come to planet Earth? Could they have gone underground, like you say?
Well, sure they could have, George, because here's the other thing. You know, the only thing we know for sure is that this large planet, Planet X, Planet V, whatever you want to call it, Tom Van Flandern called it Planet V, it did explode. We don't know why it exploded. It could very well be that the inhabitants of Mars were the ones who blew it up. I mean, we have no idea what was going on at that time in the solar system. We don't know when it happened for sure. We do know that about 1.35 million years ago, the orbit of Mars was far more circular than it is today. It was almost perfectly circular. So that may be when it happened, about 1.3 million years ago. But they might have had time. If you know, again, you don't want to get into these really super speculative kinds of scenarios, but what if there was a war of some kind going on and that other planet being blown up was part of a conflict rather than simply being some sort of natural disaster? And there are several mechanisms that could make, you know, for a natural disaster like that. But it's very possible they were already moving to Earth, or they were moving off to the parts of the asteroid belt, and maybe they came back and tried to reestablish civilization on Mars and lived underground, you know, like the Krell in the great science fiction movie Forbidden Planet. But eventually Mars just became less and less hospitable, and they eventually had to come here.
Let's take some calls. Still a lot to talk with you about, Mike. Let's go to Nick in Bakersfield, California. First-time caller. Hey, Nick, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
The question I had was, has anything been established as far as the height of these beings that used to live there, or if has anybody speculated as to how tall they were, or like the skull, is it human size or is it smaller, bigger, anything like
that?
Yeah,
the skull is, I think from the scale and from the distance away from the rover, the skull is about the size of a human skull, but maybe 30 or 40% bigger. So it's roughly close. It would be more like a big gorilla or a Sasquatch skull compared to a human skull. So it's about the same size. Other than that, no, there's no evidence, because the thing is, we're looking at these structures, and we're looking, for instance, at the face on Mars and the areas I've talked about that look like walls and rooms and buildings, and they're pretty close to human scale. But if you, for instance, had beings that were maybe not 6 feet tall like the average human, or let's go with 5'10", George, because I'm 5'10", maybe they were 8 or 9 or 10 feet tall, the scale of their structures would look about the same. So everything that I see there is pretty much at human scale, which means that they're in the wheelhouse. They're right about the same size as human beings, probably possibly bigger, but probably right about the same size.
Some of the other fascinating pictures, Mike, in the book, Ancient Aliens on Mars 2, the tree vegetation. Please explain that.
I explain it. They're trees. I mean, you know, the most fascinating things happen, George, when you take a NASA photograph and you invert it. You just flip it upside down, and suddenly what NASA says are dark streaks of wet, dark soil, maybe running down the side of a hill, become really big, large, vast palm trees, you know, swaying in the wind on Mars. And you can see the roots. I mean, there's even areas when you look there, you can see there's an open space around these darker roots where there's clearly a space in there where a person could literally walk into it. And I mean, you can see the way the light reflects through it. And that's just, to me, absolutely fascinating. It looks like some sort of vegetation growing on the surface of Mars. Now, there's that. There's other stuff that's there that Arthur Clarke talked about, the so-called banyan trees.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're going to ask me about those, but, you know, I pulled up a picture of these things on Mars, which NASA says, oh, they're not really three-dimensional. They're not really thick. They're not really like bushes. They're just some sort of carbon dioxide emission that's like spewing up in a spout, and it's staining the surface, and it gives you this 3D illusion. But when you take a look at the banyan trees on Mars, and then I compared them to banyan trees from Wayne Newton's house in Las Vegas, they look exactly the same. I mean, they literally look exactly the same. And sometimes things just are what they appear to be. Sometimes they're just trees. Sometimes they're just bushes, you know?
Well, if it's not vegetation, what the heck are they?
Well, it has to be. To me, it has to be vegetation. I mean, really, there's only two explanations. You can take the picture and flip it upside down, and it kind of does vaguely look like dark stuff streaming down, you know, the side of a hill. But when you flip it over the other way, which I think is the correct orientation, what you see is that they are some sort of vegetation trees, literally growing up out of the surface with root structures down below and what look to be leafy growths and things at the very top. And, you know, I mean, I can't say what they are other than they're probably trees of some kind.
Let's go east. Carl is truck driving in Georgia now. Hey, Carl, you're on with Mike Vera.
How you doing there, gentlemen?
Good.
Long-time listener. Well, good, good. Long-time listener of the show, both Ancient Aliens and Coast to Coast.
Super.
And I got a question about the face on Mars.
Okay.
We can discuss the fact whether or not it's a man-made face or what or natural, but the fact of the matter is the ring, there's a ring around, like a halo ring around the face of Mars that is so prominent, and it looks like a worn road that goes around the base of the face of Mars. Does anybody know anything about that?
That's the headdress, Mike, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the headdress, or it's the first level platform upon which the face is constructed. I mean, it's kind of like what you see is, you know, you see parallel lines. You've got two sides of the face, the west side and the east side. They're both almost perfectly straight for hundreds and hundreds of meters. They're absolutely parallel to each other. And then at the top and bottom, you've got a rounded shape, you know, a radius that's exactly the same at the top and the bottom. And it is a beveled platform that, you know, the thing about it is, George, is that it's so amazing is that when you look at that so-called headdress area, it's all at the same level. I mean, you come up a certain few hundred feet, and you've got basically a flat surface, and then the rest of the face is stuck on top of that or constructed on top of that or you know, eroded or modified, like a modified natural structure. And that alone, just the shape of that, right there screams that it's artificial, because again, I'm wide open to this. If there's any geologist out there that can show me a naturally occurring mountain on planet Earth that's isolated all by itself, that has two parallel straight edges like that, you know, a mile or so away from each other, and has these two exact same radiuses around it, that exact same shape, and it's beveled to a perfectly flat platform, hey, you know, I'll rethink the face on Mars. But nobody's ever shown me a picture of anything remotely like that in geology.
And it has similarities to the Sphinx in that, you know, structures made out of huge rock. It's strange.
Yeah, it could be something that maybe started out somewhat natural and was modified, but I don't think so, just because that base is so artificial looking. You know, I just don't think that it could have been anything other than artificial in the first place. Like, it was deliberately placed there with that exact size and shape. And, you know, it's been eroded since then somewhat, but I think we're still looking pretty much at the original face. And, you know, again, this is just one of the details of it that is so interesting and so compelling and so hard to refute.
The eye socket is amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, look, you've seen that before, and, I mean, what we're talking about is you've got an eyebrow. You've got – the thing about it is that area there, you've got a pupil, which, by the way, all the critics, all the people who say there's no such thing as the face on Mars, when Vince DiPietro first did his analysis and said, I think there's a rounded – like pupil, right where a pupil should be on that right eye socket. They all trashed him. They all said all the same things they say today, that it wasn't there, that he was overanalyzing things, that it was all an artifact. When they got the good picture, sure enough, there was this pupil structure. Below that, there's this obviously geometric matrix of support, underlying support structure for the eye itself. And it's even shaped like a human eyeball, George, with a tear duct in the corner. I mean, you know, I don't know what else people want, but when I saw that, I was like, you know, hey, case closed.
We have now Damon in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Welcome to the program, Damon.
Yeah. Hi, George.
Hi.
I was wondering if possibly that this planet you were talking about that exploded could be or could be related to Nibiru or Planet X that you talked about.
What do you think of that possibility, Mike?
Yeah, I don't relate it to that. I mean, I don't say that there is no Nibiru. I'm not going to say that. I think there definitely is a Planet X of some kind out there, which may or may not be the same thing that Sitchin was talking about. And, it may be possible that Nibiru does pass through the inner solar system on some sort of a regular basis. But these two planets, what we're talking about, are what they call super Earths. It is kind of unusual that our solar system doesn't have them, because a lot of solar systems do, and it would seem like logically that we would have them there. But right where they would be normally, you know, what we've got is Mars, which appears to have been a moon of it and devastated by the destruction of it, and then we've got the asteroid belt, which is what's left from the first super Earth. So I don't think it's related to Nibiru, but there's also another way you can look at Sitchin, which is that you can look at his stuff from an allegorical standpoint or a symbolic interpretation. You know, Nibiru means the planet of the crossing. Okay, it does not necessarily mean the planet of crossing. It could be the planet of the crossing. And the crossing could actually refer to the crossing of the Anunnaki species, who, let's say, lived, I don't know, on Mars at one time, and the human species, where the genes were then mixed together and a new hybrid was created between the two of them. Because if they did live on Mars, and Mars was devastated, and they couldn't stay there, those that survived could not stay there any longer, then the next place they could go that would be reasonably similar that they could inhabit would be the Earth. And the best way, I think, to adapt to a new planet would be to interbreed or genetically intertwine with whatever species was already there. So if that's what happened, then Mars is the planet of the crossing, and Mars is actually Nibiru.
What if Mars was merely a base for some extraterrestrials, and, you know, they, you know, got out of there just in time when the planet blew up?
It's possible, George, but the thing is, there's so much ruin. There's so many ruins there. There's so much stuff there. There appears to be different epochs. There appears to be really, really ancient, old stuff that's been buried very deep. And then there's much newer stuff that's been built on top. And, you know, but it's like it's everywhere. I mean, you know, everywhere that they've landed now in Gale Crater, the Spirit and Opportunity land in two different places. We've had the Viking missions, which were, you know, search for life. We've got the Cydonia stuff. We've got the Pathfinder landing site where there have been artifacts found. So I think what you're talking about is a planet-wide civilization. It doesn't look like it was just a stopover point. It looks like it was absolutely filled, literally filled with all kinds of civilization. And that implies to me that it's more than just a waypoint.
Mike, when we come back from the break, let's get back into the Parrot City on Mars and tell me what really fascinates you the most about that. People want to pick up your book, Ancient Aliens on Mars 2. Where do they go?
They can go to Adventures Unlimited Press. They can order it directly from them. They can go to Amazon.com. You can go to your local bookstore, like the Barnes & Noble. They should all have them by now. And if you want an autographed copy, there's a link on my blog site where you can go in and send money to a PayPal, and I'll personalize an autographed one for you.
We shall be back with Final Calls with Mike Barra on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We'll take your calls here with Mike Barra. Mike, let's get back into Parrot City again. What fascinates you about this area?
Well, I just think the regular geometric construction of the area is the first thing I noticed. I mean, immediately when you look at it from a distance, there's this very clear geometric pattern. You can see five or six or seven roads that come from, you know, what some of the pictogram people, you know, like George Haas, what these guys think is a parrot depiction of an animal, and what he calls the wing of the parrot, and these roads go right in. And as I followed these roads, you know, I could see these block structures which looked exactly like houses. And I mean, literally, what caught my eye is that I had just been looking at my own place in Redondo Beach through Google Earth, and I was like looking at that, going, "Wow, this looks exactly like a beachfront community. There's houses here, and I can see there's a little hotel on the beach with two stories." And then, you know, as I started to go through it and go from right to left, I just begin to see these extraordinary sections, all of which were just full of things that could not be natural. I mean, we're talking about bridges that crossed over open open spaces with support struts underneath them. We're looking at houses. I mean, there's things with what look like, I don't know, solar panels and tubes and wires on their roof. And, you know, who knows, George, but it's all really pretty amazing stuff.
It also looks like small little subdivision houses, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And in fact, one of the pictures I've got posted, I think in one of the areas that looks like a subdivision, I've actually put in there a little to scale white tractor trailer, 18-wheeler semi truck there. And when you look at it that way, you can see undeniably that you've got multiple level houses. So as you start, you know, as my brain started to wrap itself around this, what you see is you see what look like industrial areas. And then there are roads, there's straight line roads leading from these industrial areas to areas that look like little housing communities where people would live and maybe walk to work or take the tunnel to work. And there's even what looks like to me like a kind of a half buried office complex where the engineers would work. And there's venting and structures and a thing I call the loading dock, which clearly, you know, is a platform that you could land a helicopter on or something and unload supplies into this. I mean, it's pretty amazing stuff. And it just, the more you look at it, the more amazing it is. And quite honestly, I'd like to encourage people to take a look at it themselves. And I think I'll post the base images that I work with
sure.
at some point. And because I'm sure there's stuff that I still haven't even found. I mean, there's this huge thing that looks like a potato bug. And it's obviously some sort of balloon or rounded structure. And there's all kinds of tubes leading into it that are just plain as day. And I mean, it's really, really amazing. So I just thought this is the clearest thing that I've seen that looks like a city on Mars. And you just can't come up with a natural geological explanation for this stuff.
Well, let's go to George in Anaheim, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, George. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, great show.
Thank you.
I've got this this theory from Chuck Missler, past guest,
uh-huh.
on Mars. It's you got to get him back on the show to talk about this.
Sure.
He has this. He heard this theory that Mars used to pass between the Earth and the Moon. And that's what caused all the craters on the moon was, you know, all the turbulence and whatever. And, he bases it on Jonathan Swift. He wrote a story about the one moon on Mars, the dark moon that rotated around the opposite direction, you know. I don't know if you've ever heard this theory. Yeah, I think that was it. And I guess Jonathan Swift, when he wrote this story, there were no telescopes that could see, that could pick up the stuff on Mars. So he, you know, this theory is that Jonathan Swift actually heard this story from someone else who saw Mars passing between the Earth and the Moon.
Might Mars have had an irregular orbit, Mike?
It does have an extremely irregular orbit now, but it doesn't seem likely it would be that irregular. Because what you're talking about is you're talking about tremendous distances between the two planets. I mean, right now it varies between 34 million miles at its closest approach to about 243 million miles at its farthest. So, I mean, that's a pretty wide variation already, and that's primarily due to the eccentricity of Mars orbit more than it is the Earth. So, you know, it just doesn't seem like a very likely scenario. There were a lot of very fanciful ideas about Mars in the past, you know, about 100 years ago,
oh, sure.
and even a little earlier than that. But the thing is, you know, George, is a whole lot of those fanciful ideas are actually kind of being confirmed and starting to come true. I mean, more and more of them are coming back around and looking pretty interesting. I mean, what are those glass worms or glass tubes on Mars if they're not canals or some sort of water transport system? I mean, if that's really what they are, then maybe Percival Lowell wasn't nuts after all. So, you know, again, we have to be patient and kind of wait for the data to fill itself out. But I think clearly the evidence of Mars being a moon, because it has these massive tidal bulges on exactly 180 degrees apart on the surface of the planet, I think that's pretty compelling evidence that it was in orbit around this very large object for a long time, and it could not have gotten those if it was wandering through the solar system like that description.
And didn't Schiaparelli many, many years ago also see canals on Mars?
Yeah, Schiaparelli, Lowell did a lot of that.
They all did.
You know, and yeah, they all looked at this stuff and said they felt like they saw Mars. And you know, people have said, well, they were just sort of connecting lines in their mind, like it was some sort of weird, you know, Martian canal pareidolia, which of course that doesn't even exist. But what I think was really happening is that in the summertime, there's what they call the wave of darkening, which is that Mars actually gets darker. And I think what's actually happening is that there is water being released into the biosphere and coming from the caps, the polar caps, or the northern regions primarily where most of the water is. And then you've got vegetation sort of growing into these networking systems. And I think that's what they probably misinterpreted as being canals, or they were just really seeing vegetation sort of springing back to life. And there's, you know, again, George, there's pictures from Viking and other probes that show rocks that have moss on them that do grow in the summertime. So, you know, it all fits together when you start looking at all that different data.
Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello, Vicki. It's your turn on Coast to Coast.
Hi. How are you doing? It's an honor to speak to Michael, and you too, George.
Sure.
I got the book Mission to Mars, and it's complicated, detailed, but the pictures are great, too.
Okay.
I read the book of Enki by Zachariah Sitchin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah,
in that book, he talks about the first Anunnaki that came through the asteroid belt and came to Earth. And eventually, as he brought the others here, he did something, and he was banished to Mars. Kind of like imprisoned. And when he passed, they made a monument to him, his face on Mars. And I've never heard anybody talk about that, but that's in that book.
Well, you know, Zach Sitchin, that was his idea about what the face on Mars was. It was that was a really good book. I did read it. I thought it was very interesting.
Great theory. Great theory.
And, you know, there is some support in that in the Sumerian scrolls, at least as Sitchin interprets them. What I will tell you, which I have never really told you or anybody's really ever talked about, I can't tell you who told me this. But what I will tell you is that I have been told by somebody who knows and knew him very well that Sitchin said that a lot of his information actually came from the Anunnaki, that he actually received a lot of this stuff. In other words, these theories were not all 100% written in the scrolls. He was actually told this by contacts that he had that then put him to the different Sumerian scrolls. So that's, you know, to me, it could very well be this thing. It could very well be that's the intent of the face on Mars. We don't know, and we'll never know. I mean, you know, George, at the end of the book, I put this comic book called, ironically, The Face on Mars,
right,
where it tells the whole story, basically the story of the Anunnaki and that they lived on Mars and the war that they had, and that they had to destroy this neighboring planet in order to save themselves from complete destruction, and that devastated Mars, and they had to leave Mars after that. And so all that fits together, and you just wonder, the story is so close to what we're now discovering is the reality that I have to say to myself, you know, somebody gave that information to Jack Kirby, and I don't know who it was. And it's the same kind of thing with Sitchin. I think he's received information from a lot of different sources, so I don't, and I can't, and I won't discount it.
Didn't that Face on Mars comic book come out years before Mars and the Viking photograph?
Yeah, the Mars Viking stuff was 1976. The comic book was 1958. and I mean, literally, George. I mean, it looks and it looks like the face on Mars.
Yeah,
you know,
it's identical.
Weird.
It is identical. Let's go next to Harold in Louisville, Kentucky, east of the Rockies. Hello, Harold. Good morning.
Good morning, George. Enjoying the show.
Thank you, sir.
Mike, got a question. Does NASA have any intention of ever landing a rover on Cydonia? And if not, why not? And, I mean, we're the taxpayers, we're the funders of this thing. With the evidence that's basically there, I mean, the Mars pictures we get right now would be the equivalent of an alien race landing a probe in the Sahara Desert and running around for a while and, you know, maybe finding something, maybe not. But what could we do to get NASA to point, you know, a rover toward Cydonia? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, sure thing. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. It's one I get asked a lot, and the answer is because the game would be up. I mean, if Cydonia is so artificial, everything there is so clearly artificial, all these different structures. So right now they land in, for instance, Gale Crater, where Curiosity is now, and it starts, the rover starts to drive around, and it's taking pictures of all this mechanical debris, all these devices, all these things that look like, I don't know, George, phasers, jet engine casings, turbochargers, all these things that are completely artificial. And that's kind of in the middle of nowhere. Imagine if they actually landed somewhere where they knew there was already artificial structure like Cydonia. I mean, basically, you wouldn't be able to turn around, and everything they took a picture of would probably be some sort of junk or remnant of this ancient civilization. And, you know, the simple fact is that if they did that, the game would be up. And the other thing, too, is that if they did land there, it would call so much attention to Cydonia and so much attention to the independent research community, people like Hoagland, people like Dr. Mark Carlotto, you know, I guess I can include myself in that now, and many other people that have studied this area for so long, that basically everybody would know they were going there because they were looking for artifacts. And that would really be against everything NASA has ever stood for, which has basically been to suppress this information as best it can. It's like they've got a dual job. They've got to get it out there, but they can't get it out there in a way that's too obvious, and they can't ever acknowledge what's on their own pictures.
Mike, what if somebody else gets to Mars with good rovers and they release incredible information about artifacts?
That would be great, but who's the somebody else? I mean, you know, again,
the Chinese are going to get there eventually.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that there's some, there really, to my mind, there's like a worldwide agreement to keep this stuff under the hood a little bit. And it seems that way because, you know, the ESA, the European Space Agency, they did, it's kind of interesting, George, they took pictures that really confirmed a lot of stuff that we thought about Cydonia and the face on Mars and other places on Mars, and they took images that really put them in conflict with NASA, but at the same time, they put up very disparaging sort of political articles. In other words, they kind of put up these articles that said, oh, the face on Mars, it really isn't a face, but then they show you a picture where it's so obviously artificial, you know? So they kind of seem like they cooperated with NASA. There was even this thing that I call the Elephant Man image of the face on Mars, where they took their data and put it together with Dr. Malin's data and the NASA JPL stuff, and this gigantic, enormous hump appeared on the face, which was all due to, you know, NASA's contamination of the ESA source data. And ESA put out their own versions, 3D versions, that don't show the hump, so it's clearly not there. But, you know, why would they even cooperate with NASA to that point? So I just don't think that these guys are going to be allowed to talk about this. I think this is a decision that's made at a governmental level. It's not made at the scientific level. And if it was made at the scientific level, they would just put these pictures out and not comment on them and let people do research papers on them and have them reviewed by others, which they just are never going
to
do.
We'll go to St. Louis. Colton's with us on the wild card line. Colton, go ahead.
Hi, George. I had a question for Mike about the face on Mars.
Sure.
Mike said there was possibly people on Mars, and I was wondering if they made that face and if it represented something for them, maybe a religion or something.
What would the face have been for, Mike?
Well, it would have been to call attention to it. I mean, you know, I think the best theory about what the face is and what all that stuff is around Cydonia is that there was a message that the builders of it wanted to send to us. And part of the message was, look at the mathematical arrangements of all this stuff and point us, because that points you to a higher physics, to this hyperdimensional physics idea, the idea that you can derive energy from higher spatial dimensions simply by rotating stuff. That's a crucial gift that they gave us. And also to remind us that they were once here on the planet Mars and that we are related to them in some way, which is why it looks so familiar. So it was definitely a marker. It was definitely a monument that was meant to be viewed from space and by a civilization that was advanced enough to understand and interpret what they were actually looking at. So to me, could that be a religious figure? Absolutely. It could be Enki. It could be Jesus. It could be all sorts of things. I mean, the truth is the face is a bit eroded, so we don't know what it looked like in its heyday. But to me, there's no question that what this stuff is and the meaning of it is to say, you are not alone, and there are many things that you do not know that you need to learn. And I think it's the beginning of our lesson. It's the beginning of our adulthood as a species. That's what the intent of Cydonia, the Face on Mars, and a lot of this other stuff is. It's to let us know we're not alone and we're ready to grow up.
That could be. Al in Buffalo, New York, final caller. Go ahead, Al.
Hey, great show, George. Got a question for Mike. I just want to also say I agree with everything that he's saying about, you know, things being suppressed, information not getting out, you know, stuff like that, and the possibility of people actually living there on Mars. My question was, I've seen pictures of pyramids on Mars, and I was wondering if they were related to ours, like with the same alignments with the stars of Orion's belt. I was wondering if there's some type of correlation there. And also, I've seen pictures and weird, I've seen videos of the moon and weird structures on the moon, like maybe like an airport or different types of different structures.
The moon does have weird structures. Mike, we've got a minute left. Go ahead.
Yeah, for that, I'd recommend my book, Ancient Aliens on the Moon, which was my 2012 book. Go take a look at some of that stuff and look at my blog page. There is some weird stuff there. The pyramids that are on Mars are very similar to the ones on Earth. There are none that I've seen that are aligned like the belt stars of Orion. That would be really, really impressive if we could find something like that. But the pyramids that you do see are of all types. There's three-sided tetrahedral pyramids. There's four-sided Egyptian pyramids. In the previous book, In Ancient Aliens on Mars 1, I actually make a comparison between a Chinese pyramid and Carl Sagan, one of Carl Sagan's pyramids of Elysium. And there's five-sided pentagonal pyramids like the D&M at Cydonia. So there's these same structures everywhere. And we look at them, and what we see is we see the same thing we have here. So we're looking at, I think, a civilization that's somehow related to our own.
All right, Mike Barra, always a pleasure having you on the program, my friend. Be well.
Thank you very much, George, and I'll talk to you next time.
Ancient Aliens on Mars, number 2. Up next, the spirits of Ouija. Karen Dahlman joins us on Coast to Coast AM.